Slime Wire. Choose your own adventure.
Thank you. Sensei will be the host this evening to make it right, since he fucked up so bad when we first tried to get you on, you know.
Yeah, got a lot to apologize for.
Dude, I don't give a shit about that. I mean, do you know how many like DMs I get or I read and I'm like, oh, I really should reply, and then I just don't ever, and then I feel bad about it weeks later, and then it's like, oh, it's too late to respond now. It's weird, but
I know, right?
Yeah, but Ikemen Sensei doesn't get any DMs, so you know.
Oh. Well, then there's really no excuse then.
Yeah, exactly. We're trying to boost his Twitter up. He has like 20 followers right now, so if you guys want to spread the word around.
25 followers. And I like to think I'm above Twitter. Thank you very much. So.
I'm going to give him the OSCOB boost. That's where he gets a little popular for a little bit, and then a bunch of people that were already in a circle turn on him.
Hell yeah. I'm going to be in a circle. I'm so excited.
Some have called it a cult.
A cult. Even better. Let's just get it started here. I'm going to start off. Mahalo, everybody, and welcome to SlimeWire, episode 2846, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep,
and,
that's it.
Here with us, I'm joined by my usual co-host, Triton T2, and we have some very special guests on this podcast. I'd like to introduce OSCOB and Bosco. You want to say hello?
Hi. Hello, it's OSCOB here.
And I'm Bosco, even though we're the same person, we have two separate voices.
Yeah, it's a kind of a ventriloquist sort of electronic deal.
Yeah, we got OSCOB and his slightly more masculine, deep voiced alter ego, Bosco. My first question is actually for you, Bosco. When I hear your name, I'm reminded of like a surly Italian longshoreman working on like the docks somewhere. And I guess my first question is, are you Italian?
No. I don't know my exact family heritage, but my grandmother on one side said that they're almost entirely German. The name literally just comes from high school lunch. There used to be, they're just breadsticks filled with cheese and they're called Bosco sticks. And one of my friends called me Bosco and it's just stuck ever since. So there's no good backstory. It's really just it's just a cheese stick.
Okay. And I guess my next question is, how do you feel about appropriating Italian culture and the legacy of our of Italian immigrants everywhere? Do you want to apologize to them?
No, because it feels great, and it's been a good nickname. You know, it's my name for like every game I play. So you know, I think they can give me that one.
Okay, yeah, beautiful. I guess this is OSCOB's first public appearance in quite some time. I gather that you have been kind of out of the Vaporwave community, although I think you've been publishing music pretty consistently.
Oh, go ahead. I'm sorry. I thought you were done.
Oh, yeah. No, and I was wondering, what have you been up to since you've been kind of silent in the Vaporwave scene?
Have I been all that silent? Like I had a really busy last year. I think I put out like 5 or 6 albums, and that's including that 8-hour one. And then a couple months ago, I think I had my Twitter account taken away again. And like immediately I had the one I made right after that taken away. I'm like, okay, maybe it's time to slow down a bit. So I kind of pulled away more just kind of from the Twitterverse and just kind of, you know, not giving a much of shit about it, because this is, you know, it's internet shit. None of this shit's real. It's all fucking fake. I mean, I know the whole go outside and touch grass thing is pretty overused at this point, but like, son of a bitch, sometimes you just need to get the fuck outside, go for a walk. It's beautiful out there. I love living in this country. We go parks and hikes. To answer your question, I'm getting off track here. Me and my wife recently just moved into a new apartment. And so that's been an entire process of getting all of our shit over here and getting up into the 10th floor. Cause we have a very beautiful view on this balcony up here, but it's all the way at the 10th. And that's like causes headaches and shit. But
that's what's up. I'm only on a 4th floor, but I love it.
I'm on the 5th.
Nice.
Oh, nice.
But all I can see is a fucking Chicago alley.
Yeah.
Yeah. What floor are you on, Ikemen Sensei? If you want
to, I'm on the third floor, but I am afforded a nice view of like some like traditional Japanese rooftops. And then if you look like far away, you can see this like ominous monolithic tower. And when the evening, like during the nighttime, it's like lit up by these like floodlights. It looks very like Final Fantasy VII. It's pretty cool. So I was wondering, like, the last time that you got banned from Twitter, why did you get banned from Twitter? And how many times have you been banned?
Now that's a good question. Now, for the old heads way back in the day, talking like 2016, 17, I was Virtual Plaza Max. Like that was that was my first Twitter handle. And then as time went on, I changed it. I still stayed at Virtual Plaza Max, but I changed to Dr. Pepper 2. And it's like kind of my shit posting persona, I suppose. Yeah. And then, I think I held on to that one for quite a while.
Yeah.
And I think that one got like locked and I couldn't get back into it. And I think that was because it was posting about the Hunter Biden laptop, which which you just couldn't talk about. And it's really funny now that all those news articles come out saying it was all true. So, anyway.
Yeah.
So, and then I got that back, but then I lost it again because I called a white woman a cunt. And, nice. But
I've always wanted to do that.
Yeah. How did that feel? Was it cathartic?
It felt, well, I mean, she was really being a cunt. So yeah, it felt very good. I wish Elon Musk would just let us be able to tell people to kill themselves again. Like that, nothing felt better than just to kill yourself. Boom.
Kill yourself.
That does the heart so good. But I'm really rambling, getting off track. I think I've lost my account or like three times, and then the very last one. Oh yeah, it was because I replied. It was something about, you know, I think it was about the whole libs of TikTok and that Taylor Lawrence, whole situation. And there was some thread, and I replied to someone, "Kill your local journalist," and. Yeah, man. I guess I should have saw that one coming.
What you got to do is you got to type it and then screenshot the draft and then post the picture. That way, the automated Twitter report can't get you.
Whoa. Well, see, here's the thing. I did K*LL at the very least. I did that, so I thought that was going to save me, but no. So,
damn. Well, shit. So you seem like you've been. Like contrasting what your thoughts on like the vaporwave scene now to like how you were back in the day, like while I was doing quote unquote research to do this podcast, I was listening to like episodes of the Ozcast, and you seemed like you were the number one like evangelist of vaporwave and the scene in general. Like, I don't know, like when you were talking with like Icon and like HKE, like you couldn't sing the praises of vaporwave and the scene in general highly enough. So what would you say has changed between the vaporwave scene then and the vaporwave scene now? And how has your opinion and way of thinking about it changed?
Ooh, damn, you came with the big guns today. Shit.
we're hopping right in.
Well, yeah, I mean, I think back to how I was, because like I was doing a lot for the scene. I was running this fucking weekly. Oh, yeah.
OzCob was fucking huge back in the day. Like one of the like major forebears of the scene. Like, and people forget it. I don't know.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. Because I was doing this weekly podcast for free. I was putting it up free on Bandcamp. I was doing this purely for the service of my friends and my peers and people I looked up to, and just wanting people to know more about this shit that I really liked. So I was running the weekly podcast. I was a moderator on our vaporwave at the time, which that's its own fucking story there. That had its own slew of problems behind that. And I mean, also this was before I was running Bedlam Tapes, but I was still trying to do music myself. And on top of just, you know, working a normal ass job too. And it, because it was something that was just, I found this thing and it appealed to me on some sort of level. I never got into like, it's a commentary on capitalism. Never got into that shit. I just thought it sounded cool. It looked cool. I liked the community, because back then it wasn't like how it is now, where it's a fucking competition and everyone's trying to get up on everybody. And it's just a fucking race to the top. Everyone was friends. If somebody won, if somebody had a fucking article written about them, we all won. We were all on the same team. We were all trying to push each other forward. Someone's victory was everyone's victory. And it's definitely not like that now. Like I used to be tight with a lot of like the really some big people, like fucking that aren't even really associated with anymore. Like I was close to Vape Error at some point. And you know, me and Icon, we have our there's a whole history behind that. Yeah. But it's just I don't know. It's a lot more angry, it's a lot more vicious. I think there's a little too much of like the toxic fake positivity, just like, hey, love you, posy vibes, everybody. And then turning around and trying to like financially kick the legs out from underneath someone because they had the wrong opinion about JK Rowling or fucking something.
Yeah.
Definitely. And it's depressing and it's sad. And it's not going to go back. And I think this is the fate of probably most scenes and most like art collectives, I suppose, is it is what it is.
Yeah. It's wild to me listening to those podcasts, because you get a sense of like how tight knit the general scene was. Like you're talking to like HKE and you realize that like you and HKE like knew like many of the same people and were keeping up on like each other's shit and stuff. And like it seems like there's not really a tightly knit group of people like that anymore. So yeah.
No, it's definitely splintered. It's like, well, here's like the fucking Barber Beats people. Oh, here's the Signal Wave people, here's the Future Funk people. And I mean, people co-mingle between each other, but it's like you got to keep up, like, oh, you know, this person has this person blocked and this person hates this person because this person's friends with this person. And who fucking cares?
The whole idea of like not being able to be friends with somebody just because somebody else you're in a group chat with isn't, that's what kills it for a lot of me. Like there was somebody that he asked to work with me on something, and then he just ended up ghosting me. And I found out it was because some dude told him that like I was like friends with Oscob, so that means we can't work together. And I just thought it was really fucking stupid because I actually wanted to work with the guy.
I get at least 2 to 3 DMs a month of somebody just going like, hey, like I followed you because I thought you were really mean, but like one of my friends just like lost their shit on me for following you. And I'm like, I don't know. I'm sorry that I have this effect on people for some reason.
Yeah.
I think it's a lot of the same people that are kind of just losing their shit to a bunch of people. And I don't even really want to name them, but there's a couple of people that are pretty obvious that they just, as soon as they see that somebody new has interacted with like one of your tweets, like they have to DM them and say, hey, do you know this guy's a piece of shit? It's like, well, you think he's a piece of shit, but you don't know anything.
Yeah. I think a lot of people don't even realize, like they don't even think about why it might be that way. Like they'll just sort of dance around and be like, well, you know, there's some annoying or whatever shitty people in the scene. But if you ever press them about it, like they'll be like, why is this person bad? Like, they never seem to have anything to say. I know us specifically, like we've had a lot of people like not fuck with us just because we follow like HKE so heavily and like are cool with him. And it's like, I really don't understand why people are like that in this scene a lot specifically. I think part of it is because it's so like on the internet and there's so much of like people trying to create their own like ideal versions of themselves on the internet. Like everybody does that. And so yeah, the scene is completely insulated in there. I don't know.
If I can hop in there real quick, like I think one of the biggest Achilles heels of this scene is how easy it is to rise to the top kind of quickly, to kind of like be a shooting star really quickly. Like I've seen people just start, and then next thing they have like physical, like vinyl physicals on multiple labels, like Macro Blank just shot up out of nowhere. And I'm friends with him. He's a great guy. I'm not saying anything negative about him. And, but I'm not trying to use Macro Blake as an example because he's not like this. But like I said, people they can get very popular very quickly. And I feel like because it's mostly either children or either like adults with massively inflated egos.
Yeah, adults with child tendencies for sure.
Yeah, and it creates this real sense of superiority and ego. Like, oh, look at me. Look how popular I'm getting. And then you start to feel like, oh, I can start making some shots. I can start like saying some stuff. And you get what I'm saying?
Yeah. 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 It seems like the scene that has been built up around it has like basically circumvented a lot of like what Vaporwave was originally about, which is like anonymity and like not like having a celebrity presence and having the music just be like, I don't know, almost like Brian Eno-esque, like music that came from like nowhere, you know, music that you find that part of the appeal of it comes from having found it in a very obscure message board somewhere and you don't know who created it or put it there. And there's kind of like this special feeling of like finding something that only you know about. And I think that, yeah, like it's sort of come like that same like anonymity, which is sort of a condition of being a vaporwave producer, has kind of come around and bit people in the ass a little bit.
Yeah, like because I know one of the biggest criticisms leveled against me is that my ego is so huge, and I really don't think that's the case. But one thing I do want to take credit for, I fucking started Vaporwave Twitter. Like there
to EK Man, yeah.
Like there was not a centralized place for artists and fans to be there and start talking about Vaporwave. And I was making the transition from Tumblr to Twitter, and I discovered Vaporwave. I wanted to talk about it there. And then I started like the artists that I was listening to. Okay, take that out. I don't want that in there. That sounds way too fucking conceited. Can you please make a note to cut that out?
I'll scrub it out. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, ooh, for sure. Oh, that joint might have been too big. Oh, I am zooted. I am sorry. Am I sounding stupid?
No, you're sounding great.
Yeah, we'll cut that out, and then we'll sell that to anybody who was willing to pay at least $20 for that sound clip.
NFT.
Yeah, no, it's weird because, like, again, like listening to those Ozcast podcasts, like one thing that keeps on cropping up again and again is that you at that time were all like you mentioned this to like Icon and I think to Nano Shrine and HKE, is that like at that time Vaporwave had been around for like maybe 5 years, and even at that time you were talking about like old heads like coming and like fucking up the general scene, and now you have acquired the position of being one of those old heads. So how does it feel? You've completed a cycle.
Yeah, I mean, I've become my own worst enemy. No, I mean, I don't know. It's just, I guess that's just the nature of it. I don't really know what you want me to say to that. Like, what is the question?
Time goes on is what, yeah.
That's just how it do be. You get older. I'm like, when I started this shit, I was early 20s, you know, and now I'm, you know, a full ass, like, grown adult man with a real grown adult job and a wife and bills and, you know, chores and like time is a currency. Like, it's funny, when I was a child and I hear my dad go, like, there's not enough hours in the day. And, you know, my thought would be like, well, just make more time, idiot. Just like, just do the stuff you want to do. And now, like, as an adult, it's like, oh no, I literally have to plan out like my hour by hour for what's going to be my free time, the shit I need to take care of. So that being said, that's why it is so much easier to remove myself from this fake internet shit, because people lose their minds. People really, really, really hurt their mental stability by just focusing too much and worrying about who's following who and who's blocked who and who's friends with who. And, oh, look, this person's album's doing better than mine. And blah, 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 blah. And it's, you got to have a life outside of this shit. And I get that there's some people that are trying to make a whole ass career off this. And my advice to that is don't make this a side hustle. Get a real fucking job and career. Do this on the side, because you don't know at any point the rug can be pulled out from underneath of you, either by, I don't know, if you use samples one day, you know, the artist could get mad, or B, maybe you get canceled because you said the wrong thing and then just nobody wants to listen to you anymore. So, like, don't, I see these artists who are like, my stomach hurts because I can't afford food. Like, you made the decision to live off vaporwave. That's on you.
Yeah. I don't know. I did not even think that, like, vaporwave was something at all that you could possibly make a living on until...
There are definitely people that really try.
Yeah. It is wild. And I kind of wonder, I think that us at Slimewire, I wonder if that is really, like, a healthy thing, or if that's a good thing for the scene, or if that's, like, I don't know, like, the original draw to vaporwave was that it was, like, you know, anonymous and not a for-profit thing, and was outside of like a profit model, you know. But I think that's kind of just how, yeah, like you said earlier, like, the scene progresses, all musical scenes progress like this until they kind of fall off. So yeah, I don't know.
It's, well, just up. In general, being like a career musician is very, very hard. Like, I mean, George Clanton's probably doing okay right now, but, like, he's also, like, living in LA. He has to, like, have this whole warehouse. He's trying to put on these shows, and, like, he's trying to do so much. And eventually, like, his music isn't going to be as popular as it is now. And, like, eventually that is going to start running dry. And that's what happens to everybody over time. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, for sure. So, well, shit. Well,
going back to how, like, you were saying, Oscar, that you did start Vaporwave Twitter, and then, like, sort of during Bedlam Tapes, like the era of Bedlam Tapes, and I think even before that, weren't you, like, sort of working with Dream Catalog on their promotion and stuff?
Not officially. Like, I was just a Dream Catalog hype guy from the get-go. Yeah. Because, again, it's like, oh shit, they're the ones doing it, and they're the ones doing it best. And I'm friends with HKE, and he said, I still have so much respect for that man and what that did. And I think it's kind of horseshit how people treat him nowadays, when, I mean, you just need to step away and realize, like, he's just a fucking troll at this point. And I say that as a compliment to him, but people still keep getting mad at his taste. And it's like, you're just doing exactly what he wants. Like,
I think that's the funny part, that it's clearly what he wants, and people just feed it into him. And I also think it's funny that he's trolled you in the past, and you guys just move past it because you're not fucking children. But, like, people, I mean, can't forget things.
There was like a 2-year period where me and him were on really bad terms. But, like, just time heals all wounds. Time goes on. Like, yeah, he's a great dude. I have a lot of love for him in my heart. But, like, back to what you're saying, like, yeah, I was just a Dream Catalog hype guy. I talked about it on my Tumblr, which, like, had like 100,000 like, followers before I abandoned it. And so I was trying to get that out to as many people. And, of course, when I moved out of Twitter, I was trying to get out and, like, talk about all the music I liked. And not any sort of official capacity, but it's, I just
yeah, yeah.
I just, well, like, yeah, talking about the things that I thought were good.
Yeah, well, I remember, like, I was around when Bedlam Tapes came out, like, just as a fan, not really, like, I wasn't on Twitter or anything, but I remember that you, like, hyped up your releases, like, really well, and you'd put, like, you know, this album is coming out in 5 days, or, like, teaser images, or, like, shit like that on, like, the Vaporwave subreddit, and then you would, like, you were also a mod, and you would sticky, like, the Ozcast onto the top of the subreddit, and people got mad at you for, like, legitimately, like, trying to promote, like, what was coming out of your label or what was coming out of your podcast. And that's, like, completely normalized and completely normal in the scene now, you know? And yeah, start that, but, like, people were not receptive to it at first, which is interesting.
No, it was a fucking, that's all that shit is now. It's just a hype show. It's just like, get ready for this. Buy. And I'm like, I'm not going to say I wasn't doing that either, because at the end of the day, I wanted to make money off Bedlam Tapes. I wanted to turn that into a business. And, you know, but I also wanted to promote, you know, artists and my friends. It was a win-win for everybody. I got to run a label, which I loved doing, and I got to promote music that I thought was really, really cool. I thought it, like, I brought Chinese Hackers into, like, the Vaporwave zeitgeist. I brought Argaflex into the Vaporwave zeitgeist. I'm still one of the releases I am the most proud on that label is probably No Lives Matter by Christ. Like, good lord.
Fucking album. Incredible. Oh,
what an album.
Yeah.
Genre defining right there.
Any activity that you had was vindicated by putting that out, I would say.
But what was the question?
It wasn't really a question. It was just like, people weren't receptive to that type of hyper promotion and vaporwave. Yeah.
Yeah. Because I mean, it's just like, people thought it was unfair that I was allowed to sticky the Ozcast at the top of the sub. And my argument against that was like, it's a show. It's about the scene. It's going to highlight new people. And we were like, yeah, he just wants to promote his label and his music on there. And like, at the end of the day, hell yeah, motherfucker, I have an advantage. I'm going to use it. There's nothing wrong with that. Like,
well, they won't even let me post the show on the Vaporwave. Like, our show, we did an interview with Christ, and I tried to post it, and they wouldn't let me fucking post it. So fuck our Vaporwave, bro. They're fucking shit.
I mean, I mean, isn't it New Vapor still running that? Like,
he's the main mod, yeah.
Yeah, and he is quite stringent.
Yeah, he's an interesting guy for sure. But yeah, I mean, it's an interview with Christ, one of the biggest fucking artists in the scene. Like, people want to hear what he has to say. People on Twitter loved it, like, fucking, but yeah, for some reason, it's not, they said it wasn't music discussion, vaporwave discussion, which is very literally vaporwave discussion.
Yeah,
that's exactly what it is. Like, but yeah, whatever.
Hmm. Well, I mean, that place is lost. It's not about it anymore. It's about talking about the same 10 albums. It's about, look at my Macintosh Plus piano cover. It's not even advantageous anymore to try to post on there, because that's what I was using in back day, is just another platform to promote.
Albums posted on there don't even get like upvotes or like any attention. People just want to look at the new, like you said, the new Macintosh Plus themed whatever you just bought. That's just a cesspool.
Yeah, I can't really think of a big artist that posts on the subreddit like regularly. I can't think of anybody. But yeah.
Damn. Well, fuck.
Well, I was gonna say another thing with the Bedlam Tapes, and like, we sort of want to talk about like vaporwave history. I remember one time you tweeted something about how you were actively trying to destroy Dream Catalog and make Bedlam Tapes take its place. Did you want to speak on that at all? Now that you guys are friends, I figure it's all right.
That was, I mean, I don't know if a lot of people remember when he was really going off the rails with the Hard Vapor, and he was really tight with Was X at the time. And that was when that was all coming up. And I, like, looking back in retrospect, I probably didn't handle that the best way I could have, but I did not respond well at all to how how he was kind of lashing back out against vaporwave. He was really going on the, oh, samples is bullshit, the thing. And I felt like he was not, like, I guess not being very thankful for all the other, you know, the artists and the people that were behind him and having his back for so long, for him to suddenly like turn like that. And that created a real schism between me and him. And we had countless hours on Skype, like having backs and forths about, you know, just us being just pissy little bitches to each other over music opinions. I mean, we both look back at it now and laugh. But it was really petty. Me and the mods at the time on our vaporwave decided that hard, since they wanted to go so far against the genre, we decided that hard vapor and hard vapor talk was not allowed on the subreddit. So you know for sure, I was making sure everything hard vapor related was instantly getting removed off the sub. And, you know, of course, which made, you know, HKE and their team much angrier when they had their weird little role play of all the Ukrainians and the Russians and everything. And were you around for that, Triton? Do you remember that?
Yeah, I remember that. Wasex made like a bunch of different like fake profiles of like these fake Russian mafia members and shit. I thought it was hilarious at the time, but like, yeah, I understand why people were like really angry about it. The really interesting thing about hard vapor to me was that people legitimately thought that like this is gonna destroy vaporwave. Like people like they put like a lot of stock into it when it was always very clearly a joke. But I guess the fact that like HKE, who was running the biggest label at the time, said vaporwave is dead and he was only gonna put hard vapor on Dream Catalog, that might be one of his funniest trolls ever, is to like really, at the height of vaporwave be like, no more vaporwave on Dream Catalog, sorry guys.
I mean, that's what I will love about HK like the most, because he was the guy who was on the cusp of having it all. Like, I think the rumor was like he what's that huge electronic label,
Warp.
Yeah, that like he was approached by Warp to have like 2814 on there.
Yeah,
and he said no, and I will have the utmost respect of that man forever for that, for being able to say fuck you to that. And I think that was kind of the turning point for him, and I think that's why so many people, myself included, were upset about the big heel turn with the hard vapor, because we weren't used to schizo mode HKE as we know him now.
I hope he's doing well. He's been off Twitter for a little bit, so
he's
touching some grass.
I think he is. I think he's doing just fine.
Damn. Well, shit.
Do I need to speak on that anymore?
No.
Okay.
Okay. So you have interviewed like the biggest names in vaporwave throughout the entire existence of the scene, and I was wondering, have you noticed a single psychologically defining feature of vaporwave producers? Like, what would drive
autism?
Autism? Yeah. Other than autism,
Triton took my answer there. Autism. Yeah. I mean, I don't know. I do think it takes a special kind of person to be attracted to vaporwave and like see the artistic merit and the beauty in it. I think there's a lot of people that just write it off of being just boring or samey, or why do you have so many different genre names for all this same shit? And it's like, well, no, there's a big difference between broken signal wave and broken transmission and cursed signal wave.
That's a take I've had.
But I don't know. I think it takes an imaginative person, because I mean, at least, you know, I'll say right off the bat, I'm not a very good producer, but what I lack in that, I make up in imagination and my, you know, storytelling abilities through music. So what drew me to it, at least from the production side of it, is I like giving myself restrictions on like what I can do. Like with all of my albums, like I give myself rules, like with the you know, the 8-hour album last year, it's like I gave myself like a set of rules for how I wanted to build every single song. And so it just became the process of following that. And I think, you know, necessity is the mother of invention. When you take away your abilities and you restrict yourself to what choices you can make, that really pushes you to be even is more creative and make up for what you can't use by, you know, pushing yourself other ways. And that's just, I guess, sort of my philosophy when it comes to it.
Yeah. What restrictions did you give yourself when you made that album?
Well, I said, I want to use every song is going to be an entire commercial. It's going to have every second of the commercial. I'm only pulling Japanese commercials between 1989 and 1998. And it's got to be at least 5 minutes because like my whole philosophy, like I was at work and I had some personal stuff going on at the time that I wasn't too thrilled about. So I was really diving into music while at work, and I keep one earbud in my ear while I'm going about my day. And I was really listening to a lot of Signal Wave at the time, and I was bouncing. You know, those albums are usually either like, you know, 20 minutes or they're a lot of them are short. So I had to keep every time one ended, I'd keep on going to another one. And I just had this thought. It's like, man, I wish I had an 8-hour long Signal Wave album to listen front to back my entire work day. And and the light bulb came on.
Hell yeah. Wait a minute. I'm a vaporwave producer.
Wait a minute.
that album was probably definitely just waiting for it. And then like finally pushing myself to put something on it. It was like, I almost want to go back. Cause like waiting for that album to come out, like being excited for it was just awesome. Cause like, there's nothing like it that I've ever seen. And then it, you know, it was just a really awesome project.
It's definitely the longest album I've ever listened to.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I still have not gotten all the way through with it, but I think that's interesting that you say that it was like unlike anything you've heard, because to me, that album was like a very refreshing, like it felt like it was harkening back to like much earlier and like very basic, like vaporwave, like mindset, you know, or like a vaporwave production techniques. I was wondering, where did you get all of the like commercials, like all the Japanese commercials? Like, how did you find 8 hours worth of Japanese commercials and text samples to use?
Literally, YouTube. I hunted until I found a playlist of like 300 commercials, and none of them looked like they had a lot of views on them. And so what for my wife actually woke up, she's out here smoking a cigarette. How long was the production time on the 8-hour album? How long was I working on that? A month. Yeah. So for like a solid month, my day would be going to work, and I'd be listening to Signal Wave all day, trying to get ideas and thoughts. And I'd come home from work and I'd eat dinner, and then I'd open up the laptop, and from about like 7 o'clock until 11:30 midnight, I'm just going through samples, through commercials, and like listening to it, like, oh, is this work? Download it, put it in my DAW, mix it up. Is this one good? And just like try to knock out like 8-7 songs like a night. And it was just nonstop, but I loved it. I loved the process of it. It was something I really needed at the time.
I think the community aspect of that project is really underrated too. Like there's like a lot of artists that don't really make Signal Wave that kind of, you know, tested the waters. And I think there's some really cool features that came out of that as well.
Well, see, that kind of harkens back to like the original days of vaporwave, and why I loved it was that sense of community. And you know, if you go back in my earliest albums, you know, mostly the Res X Oscob ones and Overgrowth and everything, is I loved collaboration albums, and I loved it because I loved that sense of community. I loved that sense of friendship. And like my policy was like, hey, I'm trying to have as much fun as I can with all of my friends on the internet. Of course, I want them to be part of this project. And that was one of my favorite things. And that's why there's so many collaborations albums. And then, of course, I had to deal with it for years. Like, he can't even do it himself. He has to get everyone to help make him for him. I'm like, okay, fuck you. I guess I'll do nothing but solo albums from here on out now. Until, you know, later on, I did Victim with Haircuts for Men and, you know, the four-way Signal Wave split with Bosco over here. But back to the 8-hour album, that's why I put it out to Twitter. It's like, I knew it was going to get stale if I had to make, if I just made 96 Signal Wave tracks in a row. So that's why I put it out to Twitter, and I set the rules, and I said, hey, do you want to be a part of this? And it was cool, like you said, getting to see people that don't normally do Signal Wave, and to also get like some of the, you know, some of the artists I had been listening to leading up to making this album, like, reach out to me and want to be on it. And I had one more point I was going to make about this. Now I've lost my train of thought. I'm sorry.
We're going back to things that Ozcob started. It was the heavy collaboration album. Overgrowth was, I think, one of the first albums that had a ton of collaborations on it. And now that's completely normal, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sure. I mean, it's interesting to see. Like, there has been so many things I have had the idea to try and start, and then suddenly right after, like, 20 other people, it's like I start the Ozcast, and like, here's a bunch of vaporwave podcast all of a sudden, or like, hey,
I'm
gonna
good one though.
No, yeah,
you are the only good one.
Of course.
or like, hey, I'm going to open up Bedlam Tapes and I'm going to start with this giant collaboration, this just giant comp album. And then like, oh, here's 30 comp albums coming out of the woodwork. And I mean, yeah. I don't know, maybe I am holding myself in a little bit of too high regard, but it's like, come on, you see this stuff happen.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So like, it sounds like you, aside from the musical output that you are still putting out, like, do you have any plans to get back into, like, I feel like a lot of the work that you have done within the vaporwave scene is mostly like community promotion, like organizing communities and like showing people that there is like there are actually like passionate and talented like producers that are working within vaporwave. And I was wondering, like, do you see yourself acting in that capacity again anytime soon in the future?
No. it's not my game. It's not my game anymore. I, like you said earlier, I'm an old head. This ain't my thing anymore. It is out of my hands. It is out of my control. It's its own beast now. And no, I am going to be a spectator that occasionally gets in and stirs the pot a little bit on Twitter, and sometimes I'll put out music. And I mean, it seems like there's at least some people out there that still enjoy my albums, though.
So. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, well, I really enjoyed your 8-hour album. I was wondering also, like, out of the various genres that are getting, that are popular now, like, you're mentioning Signal Wave a lot, and it seems like you're very much into that genre. Like, which ones do you think are the best right now?
Oh, well, I was only talking about Signal Wave because I was just talking about the 8-hour album. I'll be honest with you. I kind of blew my Signal Wave load with that 8-hour album, and gotcha. I'm not really listening to it as much right now because sometimes it gives me this visceral, like, oh my God, I'm going to throw up sort of feeling.
Yeah,
because I listened and I consumed so much of it. So I've kind of stepped away from that. What I'm seeing is kind of the hot new discourse right now. And what's really kind of on its come up is probably Barber Beats right now.
Yeah, I'm like completely ignorant about what Barber Beats like is. Like, I listen to it and some of it sounds like it's just like regular old vaporwave. Some of it sounds right. Like completely different. And like, I don't know what its like signature defining sound is in comparison to other subgenres of vaporwave.
As far as I know, it's just like haircuts for men worship, right? And that's where the name comes from.
Basically, like from my understanding, it's like you got to get a haircuts for men style cover, and sure, you've got to just make it lounge slash down tempo slash trip hop, and that's what it is.
You slow down a little bit and cut it, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So Bosco, I think that you are the representative of this genre within this podcast that's currently broadcasting now. Am I correct in saying that? Would you consider yourself a Barber Beats guy?
Yeah, Haircuts for Men is definitely, I followed him on Twitter because I was a really big fan of him. He's kind of what got me into the rest of the vapor scene, just because like he would retweet Oskob, and that's how I found his Twitter. Like I had listened to Overgrowth, so I had known who he was, but
yeah,
Haircuts for Men was kind of my door into the vapor Twitter scene. And I don't listen to Barber Beats as much anymore, but it's definitely one of my favorite genres. Like there was a point where I was listening to like nothing but the same four Haircuts for Men albums for like 3 months straight.
Yeah, well, it's weird because like I've listened to your music, and it sounds like when I listen to your music, I can't, like, it does not sound like regular, like, I don't know, like, yeah, once again, like when I think of Barber Beats, I think of down tempo. There's like a kind of like hip hop style backbeat in the background, but like the music that I listened to from you, I think Donda Wave, and what else did I listen to?
There's one other shitty track on there that isn't even worth mentioning, but Donda Wave is probably the only thing that I would say is somewhat, you know, it, I wouldn't say it's influenced by Barber Beats, but my other stuff is mostly Signal Wave, like the track I sent in for the 8-hour album. And then I have my portion of the 4-way split on there for the Signal Wave album with Oskob. But the Donda Wave is that one is more, I just kind of fucked around with some Kanye samples. I don't even really know what to call that.
No, it was good. I was, I was interested in it, but yeah, like, yeah, I think your other album, Zentai no Ichibu, Part of the Whole, I think, is that what it is? That's your latest one that's on there.
That's my portion of the Signal Wave collab that we did. I just uploaded it on my Bandcamp, okay. My portion of it.
Gotcha.
Oscar, do you want to tell us about your new album?
Yes, could I be excused for like 2 seconds to go pee real quick?
Yeah, go for it.
All right, yeah. Sorry, I'll be right back.
I'm actually going to go pee too.
I'm going to smoke a cig.
Well, I may as well go smoke one as well. I've been needing water this entire time.
Yeah, for sure.
EK Man, do you remember I had a tweet a couple days ago about how I saw a homeless guy jacking off inside of his sleeping bag?
Nice. You're gonna have to repeat that.
So yeah, it was like last week I was outside smoking a cig, and there was a homeless guy who's completely cloaked in a sleeping bag, and all I could see was the top of his head and like his feet, but he was totally jacking off. Like I could see the motion inside of the sleeping bag, and I know exactly which homeless guy it is because he's balding and he always carries that same sleeping bag around. And I thought it was like, I was like, fuck, I should have filmed it, you know? But
yeah, for sure.
But I thought it was going to be like a one-time thing, but I saw him doing the same fucking thing last night. I think this is going to be like a regular thing that I see.
Well, at least he's consistent.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
That's important.
Is that technically like abuse? Like if you're in a sleeping bag, is that, I don't know where that lies legally. I don't think anybody would
still be
arrested.
Public indecency.
You should possibly sue him.
I should. Well, I don't think he has any money.
You could just be like churning butter down there or something, just like a little tiny
butter churn.
Yeah. That's a joke, right? That's funny.
Next time I'm gonna take my AirPods out and see if I can hear him like grunting or something, because I really want to know like what's going on, because maybe he is just adjusting his penis or something, but I'm pretty sure he was jacking off.
Just adjusting his penis multiple times over and over again because it's really uncomfortable.
Yeah.
Yeah. I saw my first homeless Japanese guy recently. Like, I guess I've seen some Japanese guys that I think you might be homeless, but I saw like my first guy that was actually like camped out, and it was wild because like, you know, usually like in America, a homeless guy's like nest is, you know, pretty like disorganized, but like this guy's like trash and stuff that he had collected was in pure Japanese fashion, like neatly organized and like stacked and collected. So like, see, I'm not fucking kidding at all. And I also wanted to take a picture, but I just didn't feel like I should do that.
Did you soy face and go, oh, just like Tokyo Godfathers?
Yeah. He also had a little kid and there was a transgendered guy hanging out around with him. But
sounds like a great time.
Oh yeah, it was a good old time. But yeah, no, it was wild. But I've seen him around, and so I think if I see his nest without him in it, I might take a picture of it. I'll send it to all you fine people.
I love that you call it his nest.
If you saw it, there's no other way you could describe
it. I was actually waiting to get on Zoom with Triton because I remember I tweeted something about American spirits and you took that very strongly.
Yeah, I'm a big cig fan, so I have like very intense cigarette opinions. That's
that's why I brought it up, because I hadn't smoked any cigarettes since I was in Japan like 2 or 3 years ago. And that's what I was smoking when I was in Japan. And I just picked up a pack of the same American spirits and they're fucking terrible. They are awful.
Yeah, they're literally better in Japan. I don't know why, like the like cigarettes in Japan taste better and they are better. That is not just me being like a weeb piece of shit. That is totally true. I have no idea why. Like,
I can't even finish this pack.
Yeah, like Lucky Strikes,
$16.
Yeah, for sure.
Damn, bro.
Yeah, Lucky Strikes in Japan. Like, I like the first time I studied abroad in Japan, I smoked Lucky Strikes then, and then when I came back, I like tried Lucky Strikes in the States, and yeah, they just taste like shit.
Yeah, the American spirits will always have a place in my heart because I remember I was drunk as fuck in Matsuyama, and we went to this series of bars, and you could rent a hookah at each bar. I didn't feel like buying another hookah, so I stumbled down to a 24-hour Lawson, and I really wanted cigarettes, and I had no idea what to pick. And I thought it was really interesting because they had a whole wall of cigarettes, and you just said, "Let me get a number 7," and that was the pack of cigarettes you want. And I just randomly picked the American spirits, and I like gaslit myself into thinking they were like the best cigarette ever, apparently. And then I tried, like I said, I tried a pack and I don't even want to smoke them. Like I lit one up a couple minutes ago and I got through half of it. And I just didn't want it anymore.
Okay. Yeah, well, Ikemen Sensei, you need to bring me back a pack of American spirits from Japan and I'll try those. Yeah.
Yeah. In addition to all of the obscene pornography that I'm buying for you, I will get you a couple of
the pornography stores in Japan are fucking awesome.
I don't know if I describe them as awesome.
No, they're awesome. They're awesome. I went to Akihabara and there was like this porn store that you had to like go down a flight of stairs and it was raining and I fucking slipped down the stairs and fell on my ass. It was so embarrassing because like I'm a foreigner going to a fucking Japanese porn store and I just slip and fall down the stairs.
Yeah. Back in those days, did they have like the disembodied like titties and asses that you could buy that are just like a set of like cellophane asses?
So in the whole wall of I think they're called Ona holes. Like fleshlights for different models and something that I really liked. I unfortunately didn't get any, but it was like a gashapon machine, but used panties in them instead of like little toys.
Yeah, dude, when I was like 22 when I was here, like that was fun. And then I came back and did that again at like 27 or like 28. It was 2 years ago. So I guess I would have been 27. And it was kind of like, fuck. Like,
yeah, I was 18 at the time. So yeah, this ain't cute anymore. Really enjoyed it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you got to enjoy it. Okay, so let's wrap up by talking about our future projects that we got in the works. So Oskob, I know that you have been hard at work creating a new album for the occasion of this podcast. So how's that going?
Well, it's funny. A lot of the situations where I create albums, it's usually because I have forced myself into a situation where I can't get out of it, or I create like a deadline for myself. Yeah. And, you know, we spoke about doing this show about a week ago, and you're just like, well, maybe you should have something to promote. I'm like, well, I could make an album. So, yeah, in a week's time, I have made my very first Barber Beats album. It is named Praise the Sun God. And by the time this comes out, it should already be up on the wonderful label Bandcamp for Gorgeous Lights. Okay. So big shout out to them. I had a lot of fun making it. Two nights ago, I finalized all the audio. Me and my wife sat down. I got her opinion on it, and she helped me rearrange the tracks. And I had Rom Breaker do the art for it, which actually I tweeted right before we started this interview.
It's an awesome cover.
Oh yeah!
Thank you. Yeah, big shout out to Rom Breaker for making that for me. But so go check out Praise the Sun God on the Gorgeous Lights Bandcamp. And also feel free to go check out the rest of my albums and my discography at oscob.bandcamp.com. Hello?
Shit. Yeah, hello? You're here. You're back.
did you lose me?
Yeah, we lost
you. Right at .com. You didn't say .com.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Okay. All right. My internet kind of got weird for a second, but it looks like we're good again. Sorry. Do I need to say anything again?
No, no,
it's all good. It's all good.
But just know that we will be demanding a portion of royalties for that album, considering that we spurred you to make it. So you could give us like, I don't know, maybe 10%, 15%.
Sure. Yeah. No problem.
Okay, great.
Who runs Gorgeous Lights? Is that Cosmic Cycler?
That is Cosmic Cycler, and I believe he's sharing it with Sky Too High. I think it's the one with the blue Avi.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah, I think it's Sky Too High.
I'm looking it up right now. Well, I don't know if it's on there, but yeah, Sky Too High. I think that's what it is. But big shout out to Cosmic Cycler. That's a very, very cool. Artists. Also, big shout out to Dream Tone Bangers. That is one of my favorite labels to follow on Twitter.
Yeah, they're very
one of the best Twitter accounts.
Yeah, they're great.
I just like to say I just looked up the album cover because I hadn't seen it yet, and yeah, it's very, very cool. I fuck with it a lot. Yeah.
Fuck yeah.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, I'll check that out. Bosco, do you got anything that you are working on that you want to promote now?
I've been working on a Russian Signal Wave album for a while, but given the current political climate, I have no idea when that'll be out.
Oh, now is the best time to drop it, bro.
Yeah, you can be the one that solves the war.
Well, see, the problem with it was I wanted to make it like an ironic, like the Soviet Union is awesome, but
it's a pro-Russian Signal Wave album.
Well, in a sense, like. I have one single of it on my Bandcamp. It's the one with the Russian title because there's not a whole lot on there.
Oh yeah, I saw that.
It's something I'd like to finish, but God knows if I ever will.
All right, for sure. Well, if you do, give us a shout, and we will we'll put it right up on the Slam on Twitter.
Right, really quick before we're done, we do have to do. Bosco said we had to do a Kanye segment or he would riot. So real quick, what are you guys' favorite Kanye albums? I'm sort of a Kanye plebe, but I'm going to go Donda. I love Donda. Second, My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy. But those are the two that I care about, really.
I'm something of a Kanye fan myself. Yeezus will always be at my top. There was something very special about the lead up to the release of that album, and that one's always going to be my top. Close second probably is going to be probably The Life of Pablo, because actually I used to really not like that album, and then over the years I have come to realize, oh, it's actually one of his best albums ever made. That one is a special place in my heart. And then third, probably right now, just from how much I'm listening to it, is Donda. That is a damn good album.
It's so fire.
It's so good.
My top three, probably number one is probably 808s and Heartbreak, just because I used to listen to it so much.
Yeah.
I probably would put Life of Pablo or Yeezus second. It kind of depends if I'm in the mood to, like, if I'm schizoed out and want to listen to Yeezus, or if I just want to listen to a banger. And then third, it's hard for me to pick, but probably Kids See Ghosts or Yay, just because they came out while I was in Japan, and being able to listen to new Kanye while riding my bike to university was like one of the most immaculate feelings that I've ever felt.
Damn, that's a good vibe.
That is a beaut. Yeah. Huh, so I'm getting a lot of like later Kanye vibes. I tend to go, I think like right now, just because I listen to it a lot, Donda is probably my fave, but I think there's a lot to be said about Graduation.
Yeah, Graduation is a great album for sure.
Yeah, like I just think that, like, I don't know, it's just when he was like popping off, and that was like, that's when I first knew who he was. Like what you were saying, like you got a little like nostalgic vibes from 808s and Heartbreak. That's what I get from Graduation.
You know, Graduation was actually the first Kanye album where I got into him, because it was like, I think it was 2007.
Yeah.
And I was very much a, oh, I don't like rap kind of person.
Yeah, yeah,
but
too.
Then I heard, oh, what's this song on the radio? It's rap, but like there's Daft Punk on it? What?
Yeah, yeah.
And then I saw the cover of his upcoming album, and I was a filthy like teenage weeb, and I'm like, he got Takashi Murakami to do the art? What the, this is a cool ass black guy. What the fuck? I remember I the day it came out, I got off my job. I was working at a Halloween store at the time, and I drove to the mall and I walked into FYE and I bought the Graduation CD, and that's kind of where it started.
Damn, beautiful story. All right, so I think that we are running up on basically 1 hour. And so are we good to go? You ready to end this?
Yeah,
yeah, unless, I mean, if y'all don't have any more questions or anything, I think that was pretty good. I really enjoyed the questions.
Yeah, there was a lot of interesting takes on some pretty niche Vaporwave history. So yeah, thanks for providing us with that.
Yeah, we'll try and get you guys on again sometime too.
I'll work on something and we'll have to come on again. It was fun talking to you guys.
Maybe if you have like somebody like me, kind of maybe from my era on, like, yeah, I wouldn't mind being on, add like some color commentary.
Yeah totally. I think that like if we can get somebody else to be on the podcast, it's probably going to be like people from your era, so yeah, like by all means.
I mean, we really want to get HKE on. That's our next big get, I think.
Yeah, we've been in talks with it, but
scheduling is a nightmare with HKE.
Yes.
I'll message him. I'll say like, hey, I'll be on it. You should do this.
Hell yeah, that would be an episode. That would be one hell of an episode.
Yeah, for sure.
Okay, so I think with this, we're going to sign off, and I'll say sayonara.
All right, thank you, Triton. Thank you, Sensei. Bosco, thank you very much for being here. This was a lot of fun, and thanks for having me.
Yeah, thank you.